Hello and welcome in to the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I'm your host, Sean. Hope everyone's having a terrific summer and you're gearing up for what's going to be an incredible season of college football in 2024. And we are continuing with our Big Ten football preview content here at the Floor Slab with another really exciting episode ahead of ourselves today. We're going to go team by team, and I'm going to give you one player that you probably don't know that you really need to be aware of heading into the season. These are relatively unknown guys that I think are going to step up in a huge way and be real impact players for their teams in 2024. The criteria I use to pick out these players, these guys were not full-time starters for their team last year. They weren't all Big Ten players, and a couple of them weren't even on the team at all last year. Some transfer additions on this list. So we can go ahead and dive right in. I'm going to go in alphabetical order, means first up are the Illinois Fighting Illini, and a player on their team that you probably don't know. You're probably familiar with them if you are an Illinois fan, but if you're outside of Illinois and not familiar with that roster, you probably don't know who wide receiver Malik Elzey is. I've mentioned him a couple times on this show, but I think he's going to be in for a huge season. Illinois does return a big-name receiver in Pat Bryant, who I absolutely love. He caught 43 passes for over 500 yards and 7 touchdowns last year, and now with Casey Washington and Isaiah Williams off to the NFL, Pat Bryant is the logical answer to step up as the Illini's wide receiver one. And they also brought in a great transfer prospect in Zachary Franklin. He was a late addition, just brought him in a few weeks ago. He had a couple thousand-yard seasons at UTSA before transferring to Ole Miss last year. Struggled to see the field, but he's a really great athlete, figures to slide in a starting role across from Pat Bryant. And even with the presence of those two guys, I'm still expecting big things from Malik Elzey. In fact, I think by season's end, he is going to be Illinois' clear wide receiver two, Pat Bryant, maybe even pushing him to be their top target. So Malik Elzey was a true freshman last year. He was a four-star prospect, consensus top 50 wide receiver in his class. He's 6'2", came into college at over 200 pounds already, so a big-sized receiver, especially for someone as young as he is. And he didn't see the field very much last year because he did struggle with drops. That was an ongoing issue, but he showed out in the spring game. It looks to have put those issues behind him. Like I said, a big-bodied receiver who can really high-point the ball really well and catch the ball in traffic, fight through defenders, and really be that strong red zone target or jump ball target that Luke Altmaier really needs. He doesn't have game-breaking speed. He's not going to be an elite burner that's going to stretch the field on every play, but he does have good enough speed, and I think what he lacks in really elite speed, he makes up for in quick changes of direction, which means at 6'2", you can line him up outside as that outside big target, but I think you can even move him inside to the slot. I think there's a lot of things you can do with Malik Elzey, and he showed in the spring game why he was a four-star prospect and why he was such a huge add for Brett Bielema and Illinois in the 2023 recruiting class. And considering how much I'm expecting Illinois' defense to struggle, I think that they're going to be in a lot of shootouts, and I think they're going to have to throw the ball a lot. Wouldn't be surprised to see Pat Bryant, Malik Elzey, and Zachary Franklin all put up some pretty big numbers for the Illini, but Malik Elzey is the unknown out of those three, and I'm most excited to see him this season and see him grow into this offense. Really excited to see what he can do this season. Next up are the Indiana Hoosiers, and I'm going to go with another receiver for the Hoosiers, and if you've been listening to this show for a little bit, you've definitely heard this name before. That's wide receiver Donovan McCauley. And if you're a Hoosier fan, you are well aware who he is, an athletic freak with a great set of hands. But if you're outside of Indiana, this might be the first time you've ever heard of Donovan McCauley. So who is he? He is the assumed wide receiver one for the Hoosiers, with Dekuz Carter and Cam Camper both off to the NFL. He came in as a four-star prospect, actually, for Indiana, but that was at the quarterback position. He was a dual threat, expected to be a guy who can really change the game with his legs. He was a part of the 2021 recruiting class, redshirted that first year, and converted to wide receiver in the 2022 season. Last year was his first full season, including the offseason, where he was a full-time wide receiver. And even as the third option in this passing game, a passing game that did struggle alternating between Brendan Sorsby and Taven Jackson last year, a quarterback. Despite the offensive woes that the Hoosiers had to deal with for the majority of the season, and despite having Dekuz Carter and Cam Camper ahead of him on the depth chart, Donovan McCauley put up a pretty solid stat line. He caught 48 passes for 644 yards and 6 touchdowns. He's 6'5", over 200 pounds. He had a couple one-handed grabs last year. He can, like I mentioned with Malik Elzey, he's great at high-pointing the ball and going up in traffic and using his strength to come down with balls. And he also has incredible speed and is a great athlete in space. He can make things happen after the catch as well, which is rare for someone his size. Indiana is going to be able to lean on more reliable quarterback play with Curtis Rourke coming over from Ohio, 3-year starter. And Indiana does have a lot of depth at wide receiver and a lot of talent too. I've talked extensively this offseason about how Indiana has probably the most underrated wide receiver room in all of college football. But even so, when you have an athlete like Donovan McCulley with his size and his versatility, no matter who's behind him, no matter how crowded the room is, someone like him is going to find a way to shine. And I think he's going to be wide receiver one for Indiana and could be in for an all Big Ten season. For an Indiana team that I think is going to surprise a lot of people and win 6, maybe even 7 games this year and get to a bowl game in Kurt Cignetti's first season, I think Donovan McCulley is going to have a lot to do with that, with what he brings on the offensive side of the football. Next up, we have Iowa. And this was challenging to pick, because Iowa famously wins with the defensive side of the ball. Usually the names you know on Iowa in every given season are coming from that defensive side of the ball. And all of their main impact players on that defensive side of the ball are returned. Deontay Craig and Yahweh Black on the defensive line, Jay Higgins and Nick Jackson at linebacker, maybe the best linebacker duo in the country. And then their secondary is stacked with talent, Jamari Harris, Sebastian Castro, Quinn Schultz, Xavier Nwankwo. They have a lot of guys. All of those guys could be all Big Ten players and day one or two picks in next year's draft. So on the defensive side of the ball, they have loads of talent, but none of these guys are unknowns for the most part. We really know who the playmakers are going to be on that side of the ball. So I had to pick someone from the offensive side of the ball, and that's even tougher because they return all 5 starters from week 1's offensive line last year. They obviously had to endure a lot of injuries throughout the season. Luke Lachey, he comes back at tight end. He is a known commodity. Caleb Brown and Seth Anderson are their top 2 receivers. And their running back committee is made up of LaShawn Williams, Caleb Johnson, and Jazzian Peterson, all of whom saw extensive time last year. So it's really hard to pick out a name in this Iowa offense or defense that is a relative unknown. So I'm going to go with their new quarterback transfer, a quarterback that some people aren't even expecting to start, but I think is going to be the reason that this offense really opens up a little bit. Is quarterback Brendan Sullivan transferring over from... This was an interesting addition that they made because it was after spring practices wrapped up that they added Brendan Sullivan from Northwestern. And the assumption for most people was that Cade McNamara came back for a 6th season for a reason and he was going to reassume his job as the starting quarterback for Iowa. But, you know, adding Brendan Sullivan could mean one of 2 things. It could mean that his rehab from that knee injury last season is not coming along and he might not be ready for week 1, but it could also mean the Hawkeye coaching staff, especially with new offensive coordinator Phil Parker, didn't love what they saw out of Cade McNamara, whatever limited amount of throwing that he did in the spring. They might not have a lot of faith in him because, frankly, Cade McNamara did not play well even when he was healthy for Iowa last year. He completed 51% of his passes for just 500 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions in 5 games before going down for the season. And granted, that's better than what we saw like Deacon Hill do for Iowa when he came in, but if Iowa wants to really contend in this new look Big Ten with a much deeper conference and no divisions, no longer hiding in the Big Ten West, they're going to need their quarterback to step up a little bit more, and that's why I think they're going to go with Brendan Sullivan. So who is Brendan Sullivan? If you're not a Northwestern or Iowa fan, you might not be super familiar with him. He was a 3-star prospect in the 2021 class. He has appeared in 13 games with 8 starts for Northwestern over the past 2 seasons. He completed 70% of his passes, a really good mark there, for over 1,300 yards. He's racked up over 250 rushing yards as well, 13 total touchdowns to just 5 interceptions. So a pretty good touchdown to interception ratio as well. And what I really love about Brendan Sullivan is his mobility and how he adds another dimension to this offense that's been missing really for years. And I think with an offense that has really lacked creativity over the past few years, having a quarterback that can move a little bit, make plays outside of the pocket, and make plays in the open field as well, I think that could do wonders for helping bring this offense back into the 21st century. Because if you've been watching Iowa football the past 2 years, it looks like we're watching a team from 1955. Brendan Sullivan is going to have to earn this starting job. He is going to have to beat Cade McNamara out, however healthy Cade McNamara is, but I think ultimately Brendan Sullivan is going to win this starting job, and I think with new offensive coordinator Phil Parker, who showed in the spring that he really loves using pre-snap motion and moving guys around before the snap to confuse defenses and help create some mismatches, I think he'll be able to utilize Brendan Sullivan's legs pretty well, and I think that Brandon Sullivan is going to do a hell of a lot more for this offense than Cade McNamara or Deacon Hill were able to last year. So on Iowa, a team filled with returning starters from last year, filled with experience, filled with names that we should already know, Brandon Sullivan is a new face in this locker room, a new quarterback that I think is going to help this Iowa offense out a lot. Next up is Maryland, and they're replacing a lot of faces on both sides of the ball. And I've talked in the past few episodes about my expectations for Maryland and how they are certainly lower than it seems like most people's expectations heading into 2024. But the name that I'm really watching for is on the defensive side of the ball. Maryland hasn't had an elite defense by any means over the past few years, but they have quietly produced some really great talent in that secondary and produced a number of high NFL draft picks. And I think that they might have another one, their next potential NFL starter, and it comes via the transfer portal, and that's cornerback Jalen Husky. Coming over from Bowling Green, he was first team All-MAC last year as just a redshirt freshman. He had 52 tackles, 4 interceptions, 6 pass breakups, and he steps into a cornerback position that is losing a lot of talent. They lost starters Jaquan Shepherd and Tarheeb Still, both to the NFL, and they also had 3 backup cornerbacks transfer. The guys at cornerback that Maryland has returning do not have a lot of experience, have not played a lot of meaningful snaps over the year, so Jalen Husky is immediately plugged in as that cornerback one, and I think the secondary is going to have to rely on him a lot. So Maryland, despite the struggles that I expect them to deal with this season, I think they got a gem in cornerback Jalen Husky. And if you don't know who he is, you should become familiar because I think he has the potential to be an all Big Ten corner. And next up is Michigan. And despite losing just loads of talent on their offensive line and on the defensive side of the ball too, I'm expecting Michigan to really win with a very similar formula as last year, with a really great offensive line, with a great running game, and with a stifling defense. And despite how much they lost on defense last year, a lot of the guys that we're expecting to produce for Michigan this year are household names that we should be familiar with, like Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant on the defensive line, Will Johnson at cornerback, Makari Page at safety. These are their best players, and these are all returning starters who have racked up loads of experience over the years. But this defense did lose their top two linebackers from last year in Junior Colson and Michael Barrett. Their base defense is usually 4-2-5 with only 2 linebackers. Ernest Hausman, who was the top returning linebacker, isn't technically a returning starter, but when they ran 3 linebackers, he was right in there. He had 54 tackles last year, and I think is someone a lot of Big Ten fans are already familiar with. That trio of linebackers were the surest tackling trio in all of college football last year. But the name that I think you should watch is their new addition in the linebacker room to start alongside Ernest Hausman, and that's Jayshon Barham coming over from Maryland. He was a 4-star top 200 prospect in 2022 for the Terps, and he came out of the gate hot for them as a true freshman. He started 12 games, had 58 tackles, 6.5 TFLs, and 4 sacks, was a freshman All-American, and one of the best freshman linebackers in the country. He definitely took a step back last year. A lot of his production went down. He did not earn All Big Ten last year, and he battled injury a lot of the year. But that doesn't take away from how great of an athlete he is. He can drop into coverage, but he's also a big guy that can build up a lot of speed, and he's great in run support, a great tackler, and he can get after the quarterback as well. And I think about what his duties at Maryland were. He was in a defense that did not have a great defensive line. I think he had to make up for those errors a lot. He had to make a lot of plays in space. He was responsible for filling a lot of run holes as well as dropping back and playing coverage. I just think that he was asked to do a lot for this Maryland defense. And now he goes into a Michigan defense that has a great defensive line. They have their roles cut out, one of the best defensive coaching staffs in the country. I think he's going to be able to play within his position a lot more and rely on his instincts and use his speed, his size, his strength, and his versatility to make plays north, south, and east, west. I think he can get to the quarterback, and he can also make plays sideline to sideline and really cut off that edge. He's a great athlete, really underrated guy, and he was another transfer that didn't make a lot of headlines for Michigan, but I think it could be the most impactful transfer that they made because they had a hole trying to find another starter alongside Ernest Hausman at linebacker, and they found it in Jayshon Barham. I think he could be a first team All Big Ten linebacker, and he's going to be a name at the end of the season a lot of people are talking about because he could have 100-plus tackles. Michigan is going to have a great defense once again, and the one name on that defensive side of the ball that you need to know that you might not already is Jayshon Barham. Next, we'll stay in Michigan and go with their rivals, Michigan State Spartans. And I'm also going to go with a defensive transfer for the Spartans. I believe that this defense returns enough and Arthur Smith is good of a coach that this defense will start to rebuild itself from just a horrible three-year stretch that they've had. They've been arguably the worst defense in the Big Ten over the past three seasons. And a lot of that has had to do with their secondary. I expect it to start to move in the right direction, but I again think that secondary will be a liability for the Spartans, which means this defensive line has got to step up and got to play better and got to be able to get after the quarterback so they just can't pick apart this secondary. And their defensive line took a hit after the spring, losing Simeon Barrow and Derek Harmon, two of their best defensive tackles who were really versatile, weren't just hole filler defensive tackles. They were able to get after the quarterback too. They didn't lose anyone at defensive end, but they don't have any bona fide great pass rushers who you know can win any given one-on-one battle. So they hit the portal and brought in Quindarius Dunnigan from Middle Tennessee State. And he is the name that I think everyone needs to know on this Michigan State defense because I think he can be the versatile pass rusher that this defense really needs to mask some of those holes they have in the back end. Dunnigan is entering his sixth collegiate season, so he brings a ton of experience with him. He has 17 TFLs for Middle Tennessee State over the past couple seasons, and last year he earned second team All-Conference USA. They have guys already on that defensive end position like Chris Bogle, Jalen Thompson, and Avery Dunn. All these guys are, you know, I think serviceable pass rushers, and I think it's great to have depth like that so they can continue a rotation, but they're really missing that big size guy who can take on tackles and win those one-on-one matchups in pass rushing. And I think Quindarius Dunnigan can be just that, and he can be the key that this defensive line is really missing to wreak havoc on quarterbacks. And like I said, mask some of those deficits they have in the back end of the defense. And next up is Minnesota, the Golden Gophers. I just talked about in our last episode how high I am on the Gophers, and I think they're going to surprise a lot of people, win maybe 8 games. Wouldn't be shocked to see them enter the top 25 as one of the 5 or 6 best teams in the Big Ten. Again, the problem with Minnesota picking a player is they return so much. A lot of their key contributors are on both sides of the ball are guys that are returning starters. So I'm going to cheat a little bit. This guy was their arguably the best player on offense last year, but I'm not going to qualify him as a full-time starter because he missed more than half the season with injury. And I think he is going to step up and really make the entire nation pay attention to him this season. That's running back Darius Taylor. If you're a Minnesota fan, obviously you already know who Taylor is. But if you're not a Minnesota fan, you might not be as familiar, so let me inform you. He was a true freshman last year. A 3-star prospect, wasn't supposed to make any huge splash, but in game 2 of the year, he busted out of the gate and never looked back until he got injured in game 5, cost him the regular season, and then came back to the bowl game where he rushed for over 200 yards and put the offense on his back. In total, he played in only 6 games last year, but racked up almost 900 rushing yards in those 6 games. That means if he plays a full season, he could be looking at over 2,000 rushing yards. And on top of that, it wasn't like he was just being fed 30, 40 times a game and was just racking up yardage that way. He was averaging almost 6 yards a carry too. And behind an offensive line that dealt with injury, did not have their best season at all last year. And their passing game was pretty anemic. Defenses were able to stack the box against him and they still couldn't stop it. You know, granted, I don't know how much of a workhorse he will be considering that they returned Jordan Newbin, who filled in really well for Taylor when he went down last year. And they also brought in a great transfer, Sia Bangura. He comes over from Ohio, had almost 2,500 total yards over the past 2 seasons and 25 total touchdowns. Both of those guys aren't going anywhere. They will certainly help him out. But Darius Taylor is the name to know in this backfield. I think he's in for a huge season. So if you don't know who Darius Taylor is, get ready because I think week 1 against North Carolina, he's going to come out the gate hot, have a big game, and everyone in the nation will know who Darius Taylor is soon enough. Next up is Nebraska. I'm sticking on the offensive side of the ball for this because I think if there's one area this Nebraska team is really lacking talent in, and there's one position group that I think can really hold them back from winning 7, 8, 9 games and kind of meeting the expectations that the public is really setting for them, I think it's at the offensive skill position players because they got some talent, but not very much experience, especially at wide receiver. They lose Marcus Washington and Billy Kemp last year. They were their top 2 receivers. They bring in Jamal Banks from Wake Forest. He's a 5th-year guy, had almost 1,300 yards over the past 2 seasons for them. And he's 6'4", a red zone guy. I don't think he's quite the security blanket that a new quarterback like Dylan Raiola would really need. And I don't think he's really going to be their big play guy either. I think he's a red zone jump ball target for a few plays a game, and that's about it. I don't think he's going to be the centerfold of this passing offense. So a name that I think you guys all need to know who could be the source of big plays in this passing offense is Jalen Lloyd. He was a true freshman last year, a three-star athlete who came on late. He had only 6 catches, but those catches went for almost 240 yards. That's almost 40 yards a catch and 3 touchdowns. He had a 50-plus yard touchdown catch in 3 of their final 5 games. And I think that Jalen Lloyd can be the deep threat that this offense really needs. And he's a really quick guy, quick with his feet, but he can also take off and hit a really high speed to stretch that field vertically and be that deep threat for Dylan Raiola. And we saw in the spring, Dylan Raiola definitely has some maturation to do, definitely has to fine-tune his decision-making, and it's going to be hard for him to produce as a true freshman in the Big Ten, but his arm talent is undeniable, and you could tell in the spring game he loves taking those downfield shots, something Nebraska quarterbacks could not connect on last year. I think they finally have a quarterback to do it. They just need a receiver that's able to get downfield and make those plays. I think Jalen Lloyd is it. He might not have a ton of catches. He may only finish the season with 20, 30 catches, but I think he could be one of the best deep threats in the country if he continues to develop, because he is that sort of athlete, and he showed the kind of playmaker he can be at the end of last season. Jalen Lloyd has, I think, all the potential in the world and is certainly a name to know in a Nebraska passing offense that is looking for answers as far as the pass catchers go. And next up is Northwestern. I have been vocal about my concerns for Northwestern this season, how I have my expectations low, which kills me because I loved how they played last year. I love how David Braun was able to really bring this roster together in response to what happened to Pat Fitzgerald by going 7-6, picking up a bowl win and surprising everyone in the process. If there's one player that can, I think, prove me wrong and be the reason why Northwestern gets back to a game, it's their new quarterback. They had to replace Brendan Sullivan, who I talked about before, hit the portal, went to Iowa. So they bring in their own quarterback via the portal, and that's Mike Wright, fifth-year quarterback, who was at Vanderbilt for his first 3 seasons, transferred to Mississippi State last year, and is now at his 3rd school in as many years. And I have my concerns about him. He's only a 55% career passer, has only averaged 6 yards an attempt throwing the ball, but he is an outstanding athlete, a true dual threat. He can make guys miss in the open field. He can outrun guys, but he can also throw really well on the run and extend plays from the pocket that way, which I think will really help with Northwestern's kind of lack of talent at wide receiver. Being able to escape the pocket is how you help get receivers open. In total, Mike Wright has rushed for almost 1,300 yards and 10 rushing touchdowns at over 5 yards a carry in his career. And I think that's a dimension that's really been missing from this Northwestern offense. I mentioned Brendan Sullivan is a dual threat, but he hasn't been the full-time starter for them. And I think Mike Wright is going to win this starting battle over Ryan Helinski to be Northwestern's starting quarterback. And listen, I still have low expectations for the Wildcats heading into 2024. But like I said, if there's one player whose play can prove me wrong and help get this team back to a bowl game and help this offense stay above water, it's their new quarterback, Mike Wright. So if you don't know who he is, get familiar, because he's likely their starting quarterback. And he might struggle throwing the ball a little bit, but I think he'll be really exciting to watch too. And it could be must-see TV. And the next team up is the Ohio State Buckeyes. And this is another tricky one to pick, because Ohio State is famously returning an absurd amount of talent, so many starters from last year's team. Most of their key playmakers are going to be returning starters, or someone like Quinshaw Judkins or Caleb Downs, who I guess could qualify for this list because they're transfer additions, but everyone knows who Quinshaw Judkins and Caleb Downs is. I'm not going to cheat that way. The one player who is not being talked about in the national media, who I think is going to have a huge season for the Buckeyes, is Carnell Tate, their wide receiver. Because obviously Ohio State returns Emeka Ebuka, figures to be another first-round pick for Brian Hartline. He's going to be their bona fide wide receiver one. But after that, Ohio State has a lot of talent, but not very much experience. So it could be anyone that steps up. Jeremiah Smith, the number one player in the 2024 class, he's been the offseason darling for Ohio State, the way people have talked about him. He seems to be a star in the making, and even if it doesn't happen this year, he is going to be a star, and he's going to be Ohio State's next first-round pick at the position, and he has all the potential in the world, and I think he will be a big part of this Buckeye offense. But at the same time, he is a true freshman, and yeah, we've seen him make some crazy plays in practice, but I think when it comes to stepping up against some of these Big Ten defensive backs that he's going to be facing against, it might take him another year to really get to the level he needs to be a full-time starter in this offense. So that's why I think Carnell Tate is the name to know. He was last year's offseason darling. He was a true freshman last year who impressed a lot of coaches, a lot of players. He was the guy that everyone couldn't stop talking about in last year's recruiting class at wide receiver for Ohio State. And he's the reason, really, for the most part, that Julian Fleming ended up transferring, because Carnell Tate was taking snaps away from him, and Julian Fleming was not going to be able to see the field this year. For a lot of reasons, there's a lot of talent on this team, but I think Carnell Tate was the number one reason, because even as a true freshman, he was pushing Julian Fleming out the door. Tate was the only guy that saw meaningful snaps as a true freshman. He made a couple great grabs. There was one against Penn State on a third down. He made a diving catch with a guy draped on his back in the middle of the field, and kind of making that play in such a big moment as a true freshman against a defense like Penn State, I think showed me everything I need to know about this kid. I think he's going to continue to grow, continue to step up, and be a great receiver for Ohio State. He's on the smaller side. I think he's under 6 feet tall, but he's a great athlete, great change of direction, incredible route runner, and he's got a really strong set of hands. I think he's great at jump ball situations too, even for someone on the smaller side as he is, and he's got the speed to take the top off the defense as well. So I think Emeka Ebuka is clearly Ohio State's number one receiver, but I think Carnell Tate will end up being that wide receiver too, and I think he could be in for a really big season. So if you don't know who Carnell Tate is, get familiar, because he's going to put up a lot of numbers in this electric Ohio State offense. And then we'll stick with the other co-favorite to win the Big Ten, the Oregon Ducks. And I'm sticking on the offensive side of the ball for them, and I'm looking at the running back position, because they have to replace Bucky Irving, who was an All-American running back for them last year. Great player. He was off to the NFL. And they also lost Dante Dowding, who was a top-tier recruit in last year's recruiting class. He transferred over to Nebraska. So the assumption is Jordan James is going to take over as really the bell cow running back for Oregon. He was a four-star prospect in 2022, redshirted that season, but had a really great season as Bucky Irving's main backup. He had almost 900 total yards, 12 total touchdowns, over 7 yards a carry, which is absolutely ridiculous. Granted, a lot of his production came in some blowouts and came in some garbage time, but he showed why he was such a highly rated prospect and that he is certainly capable of being Oregon's number one running back. But he's not the guy that I'm going to say you need to know, because I think everyone already knows who Jordan James is. At least you should, because he figures to be Oregon's starting running back. The name that you need to know that I think could have a sneaky good season is Jay Harris. He is a transfer coming over from D2's Missouri State. He had over 1,800 rushing yards on over 5.5 yards per carry for Missouri State as a redshirt freshman. He was a D2 All-American, best running back in the Division II. And he was an early enrollee, came over pretty early in the transfer portal, and got to participate throughout spring practice and played in that spring game. And I was really impressed with what I saw, because I think him and Jordan James are going to make an insane dynamic duo at running back. And what I loved about Jay Harris is he seems to be a really great pass catcher as well. And I think that's something that he can take off of Jordan James' plate. So then, you know, Jordan James can go balls to the wall, run as hard as he can first and second down, and then they can bring in Jay Harris, who's a great runner, but also a pass catcher. I think it's going to make it really hard to defend this Oregon backfield. So Jordan James figures to be Oregon's RB1, but I think Jay Harris is going to be right there next to him, forming a great duo at the position, a conference that is littered with great running backs. Oregon has one of the best duos in the entire country. So Jay Harris, you need to know who he is, because he's going to put up a big season as Oregon's RB2 third down running back, pass catching back type guy. And next up is Penn State. I'd honestly wish I had a wide receiver to talk about here, because I've been very vocal about how concerned I am about that position group, and I think how that's going to be their limiting factor on offense. And just the guys that I can talk about on in their wide receiver position, I'm just not super excited about. There's Harrison Wallace, who had a nice 2022 season but battled injury last year. He figures to be a starter, but I don't think he's going to really wow anyone in this offense. Omari Evans flashed some nice plays at the end of last year. He's maybe a name to know. And then obviously transfer Julian Fleming. And outside of those three guys, it's just massive question marks, not a lot of depth. And it just reaffirms my concern I have for that position group. So for the player that you need to know that you probably don't know for Penn State, I'm going to go to the defensive side of the ball. And as great as this defense is looking like it's going to be, their cornerback is a little bit of a question mark, because they lose their top three guys from last year in Caleb King, Taquan Hardy, and Johnny Dixon. But I think they have their next great cornerback, their next lockdown guy to follow in the shoes like Joey Porter Jr. and Caleb King, and that's Cam Miller. He was a four-star prospect in 2022, a top 200 prospect. Even with being fourth or fifth on the depth chart last year, he was able to get into some big-time games, and he made the most of his snaps. He had 24 tackles, 4 TFLs, 3 sacks, an interception, and 3 pass breakups. What I love about him is he's a great cover guy. Yeah, I think he's certainly someone that can man up some of the best receivers in the Big Ten, and he's great at breaking on the ball, making a play on the ball, whether it just be getting a hand on it or picking it off and making a play after he has the ball in his hands. But he's also a great tackler. I think they can also do a lot of creative things with him, you know, move him to nickel, move him to linebacker for a play, you know, get him blitzing and get him getting after the quarterback or setting the edge, making plays in the backfield. He's certainly that type of athlete, and I think he's really versatile. His pass coverage skills may need a little bit more development as this is his first year as a full-time starter. I think him being the athlete he is and the tackler that he will allow this defensive coaching staff for Penn State to really put him wherever they want, play chess with him, and him be a real difference maker for this defense. So Penn State's defense doesn't have a whole lot of new faces, but one of them is Cam Miller, and that's a name to know in 2024. And next up is the Purdue Boilermakers, heading into year two with head coach Ryan Walters. And this is another tricky one to pick, trying to figure out who the unknown guy that's going to step up and surprise a lot of people is, because they returned some studs on both sides of the ball, like center Garce Hartwig on their offensive line, linebacker Kidron Jenkins, and safety Dylan Thineman. All of those guys have legitimate All-American potential. But they also have to replace a ton from last year. They bring in a lot of transfers, but making sense of the Boilermaker depth chart is going to be really hard until we hear some more reports come out from fall camp, because there's just a lot of guys from a lot of different schools and a lot of backups returning that are all vying for starting jobs, and it's just really hard to make sense what the pecking order is going to be at a lot of these different positions. But there's one guy that I feel pretty good about that I think is going to take on Deion Burke's role. You know, he was their speedy receiver, kind of their Rondale Moore, if you will. Their deep threat, he tried to get him the ball in as many creative ways as possible, and he unfortunately transferred out of the program. Purdue has to replace their top 4 pass catchers from last year, and the guys that are vying for starting positions don't have a ton of experience. But if there's one guy that I feel pretty good about his ability to step up and be that big play threat for Purdue, it's CJ Smith, transfer from Georgia. He was only a 3-star prospect in 2022, but he was able to move up the depth chart fairly quickly, considering that Georgia doesn't take on many 3-star receivers. He had 6 catches for 116 yards in his first real action last year, appeared in a handful of games. He was a track star and one of the fastest athletes in the entire 2022 class. And I think that's the kind of speed and the kind of athleticism that Purdue really needs at the offensive skill positions as they replace guys like Garrett Miller at tight end and Tyrone Tracy at running back. They're missing those guys that can be easy mismatches, and I think CJ Smith can be that. He might not be a complete receiver. I haven't seen him play much for the Boilermakers yet, but I think that just having someone with that level of speed, I think Ryan Walters and offensive coordinator Graham Harrell are going to figure out ways to get him the ball. And I think Hudson Card, he's entering what might be his last collegiate season, and he knows well enough to try to get the ball in the hands of his best playmakers, and that's probably going to be CJ Smith as far as the wide receivers go. So there's a lot of guys that could step up at wide receiver. Denylan Morissette, another transfer from Oregon. Cam Brown was a transfer from UCLA. And Jamal Edrin was supposed to be a big splash transfer from FAU last year before getting injured in fall camp. So all of those guys are guys that could step up and be big players in this pass offense. But if I had to bank on one, it would be CJ Smith. So make sure you know his name heading into this season. And I'm going to stay at the wide receiver position as we move on to our next team, Rutgers. Rutgers is another team where it's hard to pinpoint their underrated player that's going to break out because they return so much from last year. Almost every starter on both sides of the ball is back. But there's one wide receiver that really caught my eye in the spring game that I think is going to have a huge breakout season and ultimately be Rutgers wide receiver one for new quarterback Ethan Calliope-Manis. That's Nassim Brantley. He's entering his 7th collegiate season, believe it or not. He actually transferred to Rutgers last season from Sacred Heart. He was an FCS All-American in 2022, and was gearing up to be a starter for Rutgers last year until the NCAA deemed him ineligible. He had to sit out the season, could still partake in practice, but was not with the team on game days. So now he's entering what is definitely his final collegiate season in a wide receiver room that has some depth that they really lacked last year, but not a lot of bona fide playmakers. And Nassim Brantley seemed to have a great rapport with Ethan Calliope-Manis in the spring game already. They connected on a few passes. He looked like he had the ability to make plays after the catch as well. And I think someone with his reliability and his experience is exactly who Ethan Calliope-Manis needs in order to get his feet wet in this offense and have a better season than he did for Minnesota last year. Rutgers, like Purdue, has a lot of names that could break out in the passing game. Christian Dremel, he led the team in catches, yards, and touchdowns last year. He's back. Chris Long, he's entering his fifth season. He got injured in the first game last year. He's back. Demir Miller, he is another transfer from the FCS from Monmouth. He was an FCS All-American last year. So all of those guys are names that could step up at wide receiver. But if I'm banking on one, it's Nassim Brantley. Taking advantage of his seventh collegiate season, I think he's going to have a big year for Rutgers. And next up is UCLA, another team I've been vocal all offseason about how I'm a little skeptical about their ability to compete in the Big Ten this year. I kind of like what they have on the offensive side of the ball. Quarterback Ethan Garber's fifth-year guy, who was their most reliable quarterback last year when he did play. TJ Harden, Logan Loya, J. Michael Sturdivant, Maliki Motiveo, all offensive skill position players and guys that you should know. And I think those guys will help keep this Bruin offense above water this season. But I'm really worried about the defensive side of the ball, especially their defensive line. They lose all of their top playmakers, guys like Lietu Latu, Gabriel Murphy, and their top backup last year. They bring in a handful of starters, but I'm really concerned about that defensive line and holding up throughout the season, which means the guys in the back end are really going to have to pull their weight if this UCLA defense wants to be formidable. And so the guy that you may not know that I'm really keying in on this defense is linebacker Kane Medrano. He's stepping up as really their linebacker one. And Medrano was sharing that linebacker two role with Femi Oladejo. And so now those are, you figure, the two starters in this defense now. But I think Kane Medrano is the name to know. He is entering his sixth season. He had 56 tackles and 7 TFLs last year. I think he's going to be really the leader of this defense. And if someone's going to be able to make plays behind the line of scrimmage, I think it has to be Kane Medrano. I'm a little concerned about their secondary as well. It means they have to find ways to get pressure on the quarterback somehow. And I think that can be Medrano. So this UCLA team, I think, is littered with question marks. But I think linebacker Kane Medrano has the best chance out of anyone on this defense of earning all Big Ten honors. And I think he can help make up for some of that deficit that they have on the defensive line. Next up is USC. They bring in defensive coordinator De'Anton Lynn over from UCLA. And I'm really excited to see this USC defense in their first season under Lynn, because he made UCLA's defense go from one of the country's worst to a top 15 unit last season in just 1 year. So I can't imagine what he's able to do at USC with an even better talent level. However, a lot of what he was able to do at UCLA last year had to do with how great their defensive line was. Guys like Latu, who was a top 15 pick in the NFL draft. I don't know if USC really has that talent on the defensive line. Bear Alexander is a great defensive tackle, but outside of that, I really have trouble finding size and athleticism on this defensive line. I think fixing that is going to be a multi-year fix. And even though the linebackers, the cornerbacks, the safeties, really the back end of that defense looked way better in the spring game that they did at any point last season, everyone seemed to know their role and kind of be playing within this defense, which is a great sign. But I still think, because of this defensive line and how it's going to be a multi-year process to put the size and athleticism they really need, I still think that this defense is a year or two away from really being at the level that's going to cause USC to get over the hump that they've been trying to. So if USC wins 8, 9, 10 games again this year, is in the top 25, I think it's going to be on the back of this offense yet again. And the offense loses a ton of talent from last year. They lose Taj Washington, Brendan Rice, Mario Williams, Dorian Singer, Michael Jackson III, all at wide receiver. They lose Marshawn Lloyd and Austin Jones at running back. So they have to pick up a lot of pieces. But there is a lot of really great talent still at these offensive skill positions. And it's really hard for me right now to predict, you know, how the wide receiver room is going to shake out, where those targets are going to go. But if there's one position I'm really confident about for USC, it's running back. And it's because of running back Quinton Joyner. And that's the name that you need to know on this USC roster that you might not have known before listening to this episode. He was a true freshman last year, was a four-star prospect, consensus top 100 prospect in the 2023 class, and sitting behind Marshawn Lloyd and Austin Jones, he didn't have a ton of opportunities, but he did make the most of his limited snaps, averaging 7 yards per carry last year, and now he's expected to really step up into the workhorse role. They did bring in Joquavius Marks, who is a fifth-year running back, transferred from Mississippi State. He has over 200 catches in his career, so you figure he's going to fill in that pass-catching third-down running back role, which means Quinton Joyner should have first and second down all to himself. He's a really exciting athlete. His change of direction and his combination of strength and speed is really rare for the running back position. And with their quarterback competition between Miller Moss and Jaden Maiva, I think the overwhelming assumption is that Miller Moss will be the starting quarterback and he's going to pick up right where he left off in that Holiday Bowl where he threw for 6 touchdowns. But I'm not sure it's exactly going to work out like that because both Moss and Maiva struggled in that spring game. A lot of inexperience at receiver despite the talent they have. I think it might take a few weeks or maybe even the majority of the season for this passing game to really find its footing, which means that they are really going to have to lean on Quinton Joyner to be the source of big plays and to really be the foundation for this running game, which will allow the passing game to ultimately open up later in the season. I think Quinton Joyner might be the most important player on this USC offense that doesn't play quarterback because I think so much of the running game is in his hands, and if this run game falters, I have a really hard time seeing how either Miller Moss or Jaden Maiva can really play up to their potential. So you have to know Quinton Joyner's name heading into 2024. Only two teams left. We're going to go with our third straight former Pac-12 team, the Washington Huskies. And I've talked extensively this offseason about how worried I am about their line of scrimmage. Both their offensive line and defensive line lose a lot of talent, and they're going to have to rely on guys who have not played very many, if any, meaningful snaps at the college level at those two position groups, and that's really scary. They also lose a ton of talent at the skill position players too, especially on offense, running back Dylan Johnson, wide receivers Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk, all off to the NFL. So where is that lost production going to come from, especially in the passing game? Because they have some decent talent in the waiting room. Rasheed Williams, he had 2 catches last year, former four-star prospect. Denzel Boston had 5 catches last year. But I'm not so sure I see those guys stepping into big roles this season. I think the passing game is really going to be shouldered by transfer wide receiver Jeremiah Hunter. And that's the name on this offense that I think you need to know. He's a fifth-year player transferring over from Cal. He had 122 catches for almost 1,700 yards and 12 touchdowns over the past 2 seasons for the Golden Bears. And that's despite Cal consistently being one of, if not the worst team in the Pac-12. He was really able to keep that passing game alive with his versatility because he's a great athlete in space, but he's also a really long receiver who's great at jump balls and can stretch the field, which is something I think, even though Washington loses, obviously, Michael Penix, I don't expect this offensive approach to be a whole lot different. I still think this is a team that's going to want to go fast-paced and is going to want to push the ball downfield. And when they have a veteran quarterback like Will Rogers, I think that he's going to be able to. He just needs someone to catch the ball. And out of all the receivers that Washington has on their 2024 roster, I think Jeremiah Hunter is the most likely to be their big play guy and to be a household name. I think that this offense, especially given the struggles I outlined on the defensive line, I think this is a team that might end up in a lot of shootouts and they might have to throw the ball a lot, which means Jeremiah Hunter is going to get a lot of catches. I think he's going to be integral to this offense. I think he's going to have a huge season in his fifth year. So if you don't know who Jeremiah Hunter is, certainly get familiar because he's going to be the focal point of this Husky passing attack. And last but not least, the Wisconsin Badgers. And they're coming off of a pretty disappointing first season under new head coach Luke Fickell. And a lot of it had to do with struggles on the line of scrimmage. I feel like I've talked about this a ton the past 3 episodes now, how integral being at least competent on the offensive and defensive lines are into winning Big Ten football. And Wisconsin just wasn't able to do that. Their offensive line struggled with injury. Jack Nelson was supposed to be one of the top tackles in the entire country. He really underperformed last year. And their defensive line got pushed around week after week. I think if you need any evidence about how much that defensive line struggled, look no further to that Northwestern game where they got throttled because they just dominated in the trenches. And that's not something that Wisconsin should be worrying about when they face a school like Northwestern. But there are plenty of reasons for optimism in Madison this season, even if they do have to bid farewell to three-year starting running back Braylon Allen. And I think that's one of the biggest question marks about this Wisconsin team heading into 2024. How do they pick up the slack there in the running game with Braylon Allen gone? He's three straight 1,000-yard seasons. He is just an athletic freak, almost built like Derrick Henry, and it showed on any given Saturday what he was able to do for this offense, despite some really poor quarterback play from Tanner Mordecai and Braden Locke last season. And Ches Malusi is pegged to be the next running back up. He is entering his sixth season, former four-star prospect from Clemson, but he spent the past 3 years at Wisconsin, and he's rushed for almost 1,600 yards and 12 touchdowns on 4.7 yards per attempt over the last three seasons. And honestly, he's been almost more of a home run threat than Braylon Allen has been. Braylon Allen is much more of a just kind of beat you down. He's going to run for 5, 12, 7, 15, 13 yards at a time and pick up chunk yardage. He could certainly go the distance. He showed the ability plenty of times. But Ches Malusi, I think more so than Braylon Allen, a lot of his production relied on his ability to hit the gap and outrun defenders in the open field because he has got some wheels. The problem with Ches Malusi is that he hasn't been healthy. He's missed 17 games over the past three seasons. And as the RB1 in a Wisconsin offense, I want to know that you can take a beating, that you're okay to carry the ball six straight times, only picking up 2-3 yards at a time. And I don't know if Ches Malusi is really built for that. And so that's why I think it's going to be a little bit more of a committee in Madison. They have Jackson Acker coming back. He had 430 total yards last year. He had 6 yards per carry in the bowl game versus LSU, so he's a name to know. But the name I'm most excited to see in this backfield is transfer running back Tawai Walker. And he is the name I think that you need to know that you probably haven't heard yet this offseason. He was a JUCO transfer in 2022 and transferred to Oklahoma that season. Last year, he was a rotational running back for Oklahoma. He had over 500 yards and 7 touchdowns on over 5 yards a carry, so a really productive back for them last year. But he ended up transferring out because he felt like he deserved to be the RB1. He wanted to be the focal point, and it just wasn't lining up like that for him in Oklahoma. So he comes to Wisconsin, and I think that he's going to have an opportunity to overtake Ches Malusi as Wisconsin's RB1. He's a good pass catcher as well. He's a really well-rounded running back, and he doesn't have the injury history that concerns me about Ches Malusi. And one way or another, you know that this Wisconsin team wants to run the ball and that they're going to have an effective running offense. It's really just a matter of who is carrying the ball the most. And again, it seems like a lot of people are expecting that to be Ches Malusi, but I wouldn't be surprised if Tawai Walker ultimately grabs a hold of this backfield and ends up being their RB1. I could see him having a 1,000-yard season, earning all Big Ten in one way or another. So Tawai Walker, I think, is the name to know in that backfield. You probably haven't heard of him. Now you do. And that'll do it on this episode of the Big Ten Blitz. Had fun as always. I've been your host, Sean. Make sure you check out our website, thefloorslap.com, where we're posting articles weekly gearing up for the 2024 season. Also check us out on Twitter or X at @thefloorslap. And we'll be back real soon with even more content gearing up for what's going to be an incredible 2024 season in the Big Ten and across the country in college football. This has been a blast. I'll catch you here next episode. Thanks for listening.